Okay, good evening, everyone. I'd like to call...
Microphones on, ladies.
I'd like to call the Wednesday, May 22nd, 2019 meeting of the Oceano Community Services District to order. May we have a roll call, please?
Director Gibson?
Here.
Director Villa?
Here.
Director Repolo?
Here.
Vice President White?
Here.
President Austin?
Here. All right, will you all please join me in the flag salute?
Ready? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Okay, our general manager, Mr. Ogren, is not here tonight, so under agenda review, I'd like to have a motion to cancel the closed session.
Motion to cancel the closed session.
Second.
Public comment on that in case.
Okay, is there any public comment on the closed session? Seeing none, okay, then I'll entertain a motion.
A motion to cancel closed session.
Okay. And I think so.
Shirley.
Second.
Okay. So we have a motion and a second. Can we get a roll call, please?
Director Villa?
Yes.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Director Repolo?
Yes.
Vice President White?
Yes.
President Austin?
Yes. Okay. That brings us to public comment, and this is a time to provide members of the public to address the board on matters that are not on tonight's agenda and within the jurisdiction of the district. So if anybody wishes to speak, you will have 3 minutes. Is there any public comment tonight? Okay. Seeing none, I'll close public comment and bring it to our special presentations and reports. So we'll start with our field supervisor, Tony Marchino.
Good evening, board. Tony Marchino. I want to go over some numbers regarding illegal dumping, the 311 app. So we had 14 tickets in April, but the app was down for approximately 14 days because we had the cleanup from the 1st to the 6th. The next trash cleanup for Oceano will be in September. So we had our daily rounds, our samples, 6 work orders, 5 USAs, 4 customer service calls, 2 after-hours call-outs. One was for Rochelle Lane. They had a fire over there, a fence fire, and a backflow device got hit. So the line had to get shut off going to the residents. The other one was for a unlock after we had locked unpaid customers off after hours. We're still continuing to do hydrant maintenance. And we had a few roll-offs at the airport get filled up from the cleanup on the levee, and that's all done and taken care of. We had weed abatement over there at Well 8. We had a leak on Crest that today we had to repair and reinstall 2 new service lines across the street today that got finished. Just need to backfill and get it paved. We had lock-offs. We got Public Works Week in San Luis tomorrow night at Farmers, just to, if anybody wants to swing by. Meter replacement, and Director Repolo did a tour of the yard, and it was we're thankful for it. I'm glad you came out. Hopefully you learned a little bit. And
I did. Thank you very much.
More than welcome. Any pictures that you posted on the tank? You climb in it?
Yeah.
Good.
I did,
good.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing those.
That's everything.
Great.
Yes.
Okay. Does anyone have any questions for Tony?
How many roll-offs at the airport?
I think we had a total of 4, I believe.
Is that the monthly average now, do you think? Or
no, that was they basically had a kind of a special cleanup over there.
Was this the Delta Streets cleanup?
Yes,
now, right?
where county was involved and local law enforcement. Yes.
14 tickets for
those. For the 311 app?
Right.
We had 14 that were submitted to us in April, but the app was down for approximately 14 days.
So was this, you said it was illegal dumping?
Well, the 311 app is for, you know, any right. debris, trash, or anything that's...
So it's like, what, I'm just wondering if there was people dumping things in town, or if it's just around people that you're just cleaning up?
You know,
if we're just having more, that sounds like a lot.
Previous month, I think we had up to 40 tickets.
Oh, well, that's good.
So okay. it has, you know, slowed down a little bit, but the app was down for almost half the month.
Okay. I've seen a few spots where people seem to consistently just dump stuff.
Consistent is 22nd Street. I mean, just because you can get to Highway 1, drop it, and go. Alleyways.
From Highway 1 to the bridge?
Yeah. Well, no, actually, on the opposite side.
On this town side?
Yeah, over there between Beach and Ocean. There's an empty property with a... It's fenced off. It's a great spot that everybody likes to use for some reason.
Okay.
So...
All right, well...
I jog by that spot and report it frequently.
Yeah, and we clean it up relatively quick,
so
it doesn't, you know, accumulate and...
Yeah, I
you know.
You
once somebody dumps once, they come back by relatively quick. So we try to get out there as fast as we can.
I know you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
Okay, any other?
Yeah. Go ahead. Has any consideration been given to putting some cameras, or maybe we can look at it for next year or next fall, where these places where people are always dumping, you know?
Absolutely.
A
you know,
camera and a tape, because they're pretty cheap now.
You know, like a mobile trail cam or something we can probably look into and, you know, through the trash budget or something to that effect and talk to property owners that we could utilize their property.
Or perhaps some signage. That, like there's no signage on the fence there at that lot on
There's 22nd. Not, but we've brought that up also. And there's 5 City Fire Authority signs, you know, for no parking or fire lanes in the alleyways. Maybe we can mount some, you know, below that with an ordinance.
They think it's being watched. I think they would think twice.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like even just signs, you know, people
toy
know
cameras and signs.
Paying attention. Yeah.
Okay. We'll definitely bring it up in the next staff meeting and see where we can get.
Okay.
Is it legal? Is there an ordinance where we can put signs on our alleys?
To put what?
Signs on the alleys.
You know, that's something that we can look into. Property owners I know own half the alleyway, you know, to the middle. But there is, you know, signs that are posted at entry points of the alleyways for, you know, fire lanes. No, you know, no parking, they are fire lanes. So it's something we can look into to maybe post on those, on the entry points of the alleyways. Yes.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Tony.
Okay. Chief Lieberman, do you have anything for prior to your report? Or
I don't have anything specific to report. I'm here to support the strategic plan item and any hazard mitigation questions you have.
Okay, thank you. And then our Mr. Ogren is not here, and we have the Sheriff's Department's not here. So we'll move to our Board of Directors and outside committee reports. So we'll start.
Yes, I only had one meeting, and that was with the State Water Committee. And the main thing, most important thing, was that in the Delta area, they're going now from two tunnels to one tunnel. And I can't give too much information beyond that. It's just come up recently, and there'll be a process.
That was the Sacramento Delta? You
mean? Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Director Villa?
None.
Yes, I attended the Oceano Advisory Council meeting. We completed our bylaws revisions, and they will be up for approval at the June meeting. We have rescheduled the June meeting because of a conflict, so it's going to be on June 19th, right here at 5:30. And we also held new officer elections, so the new chair is Jen Blackburn. I'm the vice chair. And we had a cannabis business referral on the agenda. So far, those have been mostly clustered around Pike Lane. I think there's about five of them over there now. This one is near Park. So I raised some concerns just about the location, and it'd be nice to have an ice cream shop there instead or something like that. But anyway, that was approved by the council, recommended for approval. And I just want to mention that tomorrow there's going to be a public hearing about land use ordinance amendments on cannabis activities in the county, the Board of Supervisors chambers at 9 a.m. So if anybody wants to weigh in on that. I also attended the Zone 1A meeting yesterday. There was a presentation on the waterway management program, which is about to be implemented. The phase one construction starts in September and goes on until October. And between the 22nd Street Bridge and Delta Street, approximately, they're going to be doing construction work to raise the levee and remove vegetation. So on the north side of the levee, it's going to be raised 2 to 3 feet, and on the south by 1 to 2 feet. And then the phase two construction to finish off the project will be in June of 2020. And it's scheduled this way to protect the habitat and the species that live in the creek area. There was also a discussion about channel maintenance. I didn't realize they're flying drones along the AG Creek Channel to look for downed trees, so that's a pretty cool way to do it. They're going to be starting mowing next week in some areas, and the goats will be out in early July to take care of more of the weeds. And the county is working on permitting new no trespassing signs to put up along the levee, even though that's path has been used by the community for decades. The county recently had to take down the signs because they learned that they were not permitted, so they're working to get them through the approval process and put them back up again.
Thank you. Director White?
I think that my report would be on the fire meeting, and it's going to be on the agenda, so I can wait for later.
Okay. Okay, that brings it to me. I attended the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District meeting, and really nothing new. The redundancy program is moving right along, and the everything at the plant is running nicely. Everything's running well. There is our next meeting will be June 5th at the in Arroyo Grande. And we're going to be changing the location of the meetings, and we will not be meeting on July 3rd because of the holiday, but the next meeting after June 5th will be July 15th, and it will be here in Oceana. We'll be meeting here for the next few months, 6 o'clock on the other alternate Wednesdays. So that's all I had on the sanitation district.
Sure.
I see that our sheriff has arrived, so if you would like to come up and give your report, we would appreciate that.
Good evening. Sorry for being late. We had a call of somebody running from us. My name is Trevor McKim, Sergeant with San Luis Obispo County Sheriff's Office, South Station. I'm here to give a report for the month of May. I pulled stats. Crime stats for the Oceano community beginning on April 24th and running through today's date. During that time period, we took reports of 5 thefts, 4 burglaries, 13 narcotics arrests, 2 forgery or identity theft cases, 4 vandalisms, and 9 crimes against persons. There was 7 other reports taken that were classified as criminal other, and that could be a public intoxication arrest, mental health, criminal threats. So for a total of 42 total crime reports taken during that time period. Of those crime reports taken, 19 were self-initiated, so that means deputies were out patrolling and conducted a traffic stop. Which resulted in a crime report taken, most likely an arrest being made. As far as what's occurred over the last month, we now have a full-time deputy assigned to the homeless issue in Oceano, Deputy Danny Miller. He's been working feverishly to try to start the cleanup process and get these folks resources that they need to hopefully get themselves in a better situation. He currently works Tuesday through Friday. His sole purpose is just dealing with the homeless issue. We've also started doing sporadic, we call it ATV or OHV patrols in the creek bed, Rio Grande Creek bed, just to kind of ensure that the progress that we make, we don't lose traction on that and fall behind. I'm also, I started out in Oceano many years ago, worked here for about 10 years, and then I promoted and got sent off to specialty assignments. And then when I promoted, I just got sent back here 2 weeks ago. So I'm excited to be back. And part of my responsibility is, I'm a sergeant over the OHV program that we have. So my mission kind of is to kind of get that going a little bit more regularly. So hopefully with a little bit of support from the agency, we can get that going, and that'll also be benefiting the Oceano community as well.
Great. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Sure.
The OHV off-road, is it strictly South County? Are you going San Luis Creek, Paso Robles, all through the areas?
So it's going to be countywide. What I'm trying to focus on is we really haven't really been getting out as much as we would like to be, so really just trying to focus on that. So we're looking at probably two OHV patrols a month. That'll be four deputies that assigned each day on that. So it'll probably be like Saturdays and Sundays when we're most likely to encounter illegal OHV use and activity. So that'll be countywide. It'll be Salinas Riverbed, Santa Maria Riverbed, here in Oceano and the Creeks. We don't patrol state parks. They have their own funding, yeah. And so it's actually, we're not allowed to go out there and do that, but we're actually getting new equipment for it. We're getting, most likely, it looks like we're probably going to get a new Razor, which is a four-seater vehicle that's actually will be really good in the event of, like, fires or flooding. It's really a safe vehicle to get people out if we need to do evacuations as well when a regular road vehicle wouldn't cut it.
Yeah.
Is there any other questions from?
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. I've noticed some new graffiti on road signs around town. Is that something that your office deals with, or?
Yes. So if there's graffiti that you see up, you can contact our agency. Contact the sheriff's office. We have a graffiti abatement program, so we'll photograph it, especially if it's gang related, and then so for documentation, and then we'll cover it up. And we have volunteers that come through and do that once or twice a month, generally speaking.
Thank you, and mm-hmm. Welcome back to Oceano.
I was gonna say, thank you. I'm glad to be back.
Glad to see you
thank
back.
You.
Thank you.
So that would bring us to public comment on special presentations or reports. Is there any public comment? Does anyone have a question to ask the sergeant or any other reports? Okay, seeing none. Then we will move on to consent agenda, which is review and approval of the minutes for April 24th, review and approval of cash disbursements, consideration of a recommendation to approve safe and sane fireworks booth permits, and consideration of a recommendation to receive and file a report on charges and delinquencies, and to set a public hearing for July 10th to authorize collection on the 2019-20 property tax bills. Is there anything anyone would like to pull off the consent agenda?
Yes, President Austin, I would like to pull 8C and 8D.
C and D, okay.
And I'll go ahead and make a motion that we approve the minutes for the April 24th, 2019 meeting and the cash disbursements.
Okay, before we second that, do we have any public comment on items 8A or B, the minutes or the cash disbursements? Seeing none, okay. We have a motion to accept items A and B. Do I have a second?
Second.
Can we do a roll call, please, Celia?
Vice President Wayne?
Yes.
Director Villa?
Yes.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Director Pogum?
Yes.
President Austin?
Yes. Okay, that brings us to 8C, consideration of a recommendation to approve safe and sane fireworks booths. So did you have...
Yeah, I just wanted to say that there are other ways for nonprofits to make money besides selling fireworks. And I appreciate all the hard work that our nonprofits do, but just a quick Google search, I saw walkathon, yard sale, art show, scavenger hunt. And I think it's remiss of this board not to be willing to even discuss revisiting the fireworks ordinance from the early 90s. Safe and sane fireworks do have an impact on our community in terms of litter. Smoke can be very bad, especially on the 4th of July. I couldn't even see outside my yard last year, and that was safe and sane fireworks because, of course, they burn at ground level. So I think that this ought to be considered addressing the impact. I know the board has said that they do not want to discuss this issue, and but until such time as we can fully consider it, I cannot approve any permits for safe and sane fireworks.
Okay, thank you. Is there any other comment?
I make a motion we approve our safe and sane fireworks booth permits for 2019.
Second.
Public comment.
Okay, then that'll bring us to, could we get any, is there any public comment on the safe and sane fireworks booth permits? Okay, seeing none, we have a motion and a second. Can we get a roll call, please?
Vice President White?
Yes.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Director Villa?
Yes.
Director Pogum?
No.
President Austin?
Yes. Okay.
And I would just like to encourage Oceana residents to support the Safe and Sane Fireworks booths for this year, and I also would make a point that those nonprofit groups are doing a lot of the other things that Ms. Rapoglo suggested.
Thank you. Okay. So let's see. We need to move on to 8D.
Yeah, first, I just had a question on this one. I don't know if either of you can answer, but I was just wondering what the costs are for the advertising and the things that we do to collect on these delinquent tax bills versus the cost of the bills themselves. Like, is there a point where it doesn't make sense to do that?
So we have to post it in the newspaper. We usually do it in the Tribune, and you have to do it 2 weeks, and you have to do it twice, so it comes out to about $75 total. Okay. For both.
Okay.
And we have the opportunity, right, before you is just the trash bills, but let's say someone didn't pay their water bill, we'd be able to do that. But since when people don't pay, we usually shut them off to get payment, people tend mm-hmm. to pay. So we don't have water delinquent bills this year. But there has been in the past.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then I would just ask if we could make the letter a little more, if we could make it gender neutral and perhaps a dear owner instead of dear Mr. and or Mrs., because we want to be more inclusive, and we shouldn't be assuming that everybody's either a man or a married woman. Would that be possible?
Yeah. This is just a standard form we've been using for a while. Do we get this from the trash company?
Yeah.
So we can make edits to whatever your board deems appropriate. Okay.
Yeah, I would suggest dear owner. Mm-hmm. Agreeable to everyone?
They are. They might not all be owners.
Well, the letter says the owner name.
Okay.
So are they not all owners?
Or trash can go trash to a tenant. It doesn't have to be an owner.
Oh, dear resident?
Resident slash owner.
Dear customer?
Customer.
Customer.
Yeah. Customer?
Yeah. Okay.
That's fine.
That'll work.
Thank you. That's all I had.
Okay, so can if there's no other discussion, can we get a motion to approve public comment on item 8D that we just talked about? Seeing none, then if I can get a motion to approve
I'll make a motion to approve agenda item 8D.
Second.
With the amendment to the letter?
With the amendment to the letter?
Yeah, changes to the letter.
So moved.
Okay, can we get it?
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Vice President White?
Yes.
Director Villam?
Yes.
Director Pogel?
Yes.
President Alston?
Yes. Okay, that brings us now to our business items. And 9A is review and discussion of a resolution to adopt the March 2019 local hazard mitigation plan for the Oceano Community Services District. We'll take them one at a time. So the local hazard mitigation, is there any report on that? Mr. Newman, you're...
Good evening, Board. Bob Newman, Category 5 Professional Consultants. If I might, I'd just like to make a few comments, real quick, like, and then I'd be open to any questions that you might have. This is a five-year plan, and I know that it's rather formidable in some of the things that it lays out, but I would just like to remind you that it is goals and objectives that we put forth for the community and for the organization to accomplish over that five-year period of time. If we don't get those accomplished, we then just update the plan every 5 years and we carry those forward. But it's a good roadmap for the things that we would like to get done. And I would emphasize to you that it is reasonable and attainable. We really, as we put the plan together, we made a concentrated effort to make sure that it was affordable and things that we could actually get done. The other thing is that there has been a considerable amount of public involvement in the development of this plan. We put together a 26-person planning group made up of jurisdictions that are involved and the local folks here in the community that actually sat with us and worked it through. And then the third thing that I would say is that we really had a good time here working with your staff. They were very supportive and made the project very easy to do. So with that, I'd be happy to entertain any questions that you might have.
Anyone have any questions for Mr. Newman?
I just wanted to thank you for all your hard work on this and being very responsive to feedback, especially from community members who had some good insights.
We did. We got a number of really good things that we picked up, especially at that November 26th, or whatever date it was, the public forum that we held. Mm-hmm. That was one of the best things I think that we've done. I've done about 35 of these plans throughout the state of California. That's the first time I've ever done anything like that, and I'd like to do that again. It was really a good thing that you folks put together.
Anything else? Well, thank you very much, Mr.
Okay.
We really appreciate all your work.
All right. Thank you, then.
So is there any discussion anymore? Is there any, can I open it to public comment on the local hazard mitigation plan? Is there any public comment? No questions? Okay, seeing none.
There's one.
Oh, we do? Okay, please come forward.
I'm Brenda Lowe from Oceano. I just wanted to say that having not participated in the committee and doing it, but reading it, it's very thorough, very nicely done. It is a good roadmap, and it's amazing that grant money's paid for that, and we get to benefit from it. So I just wanted to commend you and the consultant on that.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay, seeing none, then I will entertain a motion on this if there's no more comment from the board. Jeff, did you have?
I don't think it's a
just receive and file.
Just receive and file.
Got it.
It's
a resolution.
I'm sorry, I forgot. My mistake.
I was just looking at the
Sorry. Thank you. Thank you. Sorry, I forgot about the resolution.
Okay, so we will need a roll call vote for this item.
We need to make a motion.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I make a motion.
Motion
we adopt
and a second.
A multi-jurisdictional local hazard mitigation plan.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Can we have a roll call vote, please?
Vice President White?
Yes.
Director Pogel?
Yes.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Director Villa?
Yes.
President Alston?
Yes. Okay, great.
Thank you.
Thank you. That'll bring us now to item 9B. This will be a discussion of the May 17th, 2019 review of the Five Cities Fire Authority strategic plan by the Five Cities Fire Authority with board direction as deemed appropriate. And Chief Lieberman from the Five Cities Fire Authority will be presenting this item.
Thank you for sharing. Good evening, President and Board. Steve Lieberman, Fire Chief, Five Cities Fire. With some help here from staff, I'd like to run through a brief PowerPoint presentation that I believe you already have access to. This presentation was presented to our board at the last board meeting, and I just thought, Mr. Ogren asked me to just kind of give you a high-level overview. There's a lot of information here that I can certainly share details with you, but this plan was really to share with the board progress that we've made, headwinds that we're facing for obvious reasons, and really looking for contemplation of changed priorities, changing visions, and some of the bigger strategic and political opportunities that lay ahead for the Fire Authority and our member communities. So I don't want to recreate the wheel. I know a lot of you know this history, but the plan was adopted in 2017. It was based on a 2015 report I did. SWOT stands for Strengths, Weaknesses, Opportunities, and Threats. It's an organizational analysis at a very high level. The document evolved into more of a strategic plan. There were a lot of questions about what we do and why there's a ladder truck, and let's talk about emergency medical services and dispatch and call transfers. So the document has a big public education component to it as well. The end result was we had a framework identified with work plans, timelines, and cost estimates, and that work continues today. So this is the original SWOT diagram that we started with in 2015, and a lot of the driving points that you see in this diagram were the basis and foundation for the plan. So when you do strategic planning, you always want to start with the current state. What do we know today? What's happening today? And what do we know could happen in the future? And then you start building on that. A lot of it was the current state of the organization, how we started when three communities came together in 2010, contributed people, contributed the equipment they had on hand, and started a fire department. And how does that look this year, or next year? We'll be 10 years old. The last three items were, it's the Central Coast. So people have discovered us. We're getting busier year over year. This is a great place to retire, so we have an aging population. As we get older, our medical challenges seem to increase for some reason, and so we're running more EMS calls for both the aging population and then socioeconomic reasons as well. And then what about development? You know, we've got a new medical clinic in Oceano. We've got a three-story medical complex that just opened on Fair Oaks in Arroyo Grande. We have a lot of retirement housing and subdivisions, and how does that impact both our current capabilities and future needs as an emergency services agency? So where are we at today? Starting with Strategic Initiative 1, which was organizational effectiveness. There's a lot of fancy words that basically says, operationally, what do we see as needs in terms of technology? This one's really focused on technology, and we've made great strides in improving and shoring up some capacity or some IT capacity and redundancy issues. We've moved to next-generation reporting systems that are cloud-based, so we're not spending money on IT server replacements and more IT staff on-hand use. And these reporting solutions give us a lot of flexibility to provide specialized reports to our constituents. The training plan. So again, we started in 2010. We're a young agency. We're still evolving. We've got a really dedicated training cadre, and we're currently updating all of our standard operating guidelines related to training. We're looking at succession planning documents. How do I get that firefighter ready for an engineer's promotion? What training should I be giving them as an engineer to step into the engineer's role, to captain, to battalion chief, to fire chief?
What's red card?
That's a great question. Red Card is a standardized system. It was actually started by the Phoenix Fire Department and the Red Card system. It has standardized requirements and progress and milestones to get you ready for promotion to each level. It's just a standardized career development solution. Lastly, the big one is research and develop training grounds. As many of you know, the yard, I have to go see the new generator. I hear it's here. But at the yard, we have a ventilation prop. It just looks like plywood with a frame. But being that we have a truck and we run a lot of ventilation requirements for us and our neighboring agencies, that's a great training prop to cut holes in roofs, know how to sound roofs to be safe, and to cut that hole that people say, why are you cutting a hole in my roof, to release the heat and the supercharged gases from the home to improve survivability for anyone that might be inside as well as our firefighters. We use the movie theater in Arroyo Grande. We use manholes at the Walmart shopping center. We train wherever we can find training, but we don't have a training ground. You'll see at larger fire departments, they'll have a space and they'll have a training tower. Those are all things we would love to have. The community's been very patient with us so far on being out there, and I think they like seeing us out there, but that's definitely something that we would like to pursue in the future, but that's a serious funding challenge that we would have to face. Goal number three has to do with internal organizational communications. We've implemented some of that. I haven't had time to become a video editor in my spare time to create an internal TV channel for Five Cities Fire, but that's very important to the employees, especially multi-general employee base, where we all like to receive information in different ways. Lastly, develop a health and fitness plan. NFPA, National Fire Protection Association, puts out standards. They're typically, as you know, a regulation or a standard comes out because something unfortunate happened. NFPA 1582 physicals are driven by age of the employee, and they screen for fixed items. Cancer has been historically the number one cause of death for those in the fire service, even today with breathing apparatus. Both lung and testicular cancer are very high recurring forms of cancer, and we're actually realizing that mental health, and you'll hear that from both law enforcement and now the fire service and EMS, suicide has become the number one cause of death for first responders. So we're really focusing in on making sure that our people are healthy physically and mentally as well. So that's, I'm talking a lot about these goals. I said I was going to do a high over. Let me move into initiatives that weren't identified but were included in the plan. The first one, and I know this is near and dear to Oceano, is dispatch, 911 dispatch of fire resources to an emergency here. This is a national issue as well as a regional issue. With 90% of us carrying cellular phones instead of using landline phones to dial 911, when we all had landline phones and we dialed 911, the dispatcher knew our name and they knew where we were calling from. That doesn't happen with cellular phones. And depending on where that cell site is located, whether it's in Oceano, kind of at street level, or if it's above Leticia Vineyards at a high elevation, oops, oh, I got back. I'm setting this down for a minute. A cell site, each sector of a cell site, so each panel of the antenna can only have one 911 connection. So when they're up on Leticia and you have a panel facing this way, it's going to reach multiple communities, and you can only designate one 911 center. You have a little more control when it's at a elevation within the community. But just going back to the Leticia, that's why you typically go to California Highway Patrol when you dial 911 from a cell phone, because they're not sure where the emergency is and where you need to go. The downside of that is there's numerous transfers of that 911 call until they find the right place to send the right resources to help you. So we'll have instances where people will say, where the heck were you? We turned out as soon as we were dispatched, but it took a while for that call to get to the right center. I will say that we have an improvement with Five Cities Fire in that we migrated to the County Fire CAL FIRE Dispatch Center in November of last year, and that takes away one potential transfer and one potential point of confusion between whether it should go to Grover Beach Police, who used to dispatch us, or County Fire. We used to have a lot of dispatches go to County Fire or to Grover Beach Police, and it would be the opposing fire department's jurisdiction. So very increase in efficiencies by moving there, a number of efficiencies. Emergency medical services, again, that's 70% of our call volume. A lot of people think everyone that provides medical services are paramedics, which is also known as advanced life support. We are not. We're a basic life support or EMT organization. There are paramedics that respond to every call by contract. The private ambulance company has at least one paramedic on the ambulance that responds with us. Our people are solid EMTs. The premise in emergency medical services is you always start with BLS, basic life support, before you evolve into ALS. With that said, we're shooting for June 1st. If we can get all the equipment that we need, we have taken advantage of a state opportunity to do what's called an expanded or enhanced scope EMT practice. So we're now, this one personally kills me, Narcan, which is naloxone for opioid overdose. Any of you can get Narcan for free, but on June 1st will be the first time that my trained professionals can administer it for an overdose. So we're going to take advantage of that. Epinephrine, using auto-injectors, that's something that's going to help people that are in a severe allergic reaction, and we will be able to administer that. That will be the first drug other than oxygen that we can administer. And lastly, again, it may seem pretty basic, but we are finally going to be able to read people's blood sugar. We haven't been able to use glucometers and poke people's fingers in the past. The last scope that we will look at in the future is using CPAP. For those of us with sleep apnea, we may have a CPAP machine at home that's also used in the EMS to maintain an airway without intubating or putting a tube down someone's airway passage. So we'll look at that in the future, depending on how many cases we see a year and cost. Okay. So sustainability and needs. I show a picture of old Engine 2 in front of the old Grover City Fire Station, which is now the Exploration Station, to say it wasn't that long ago. It was the end of the 90s and the early 2000s when all of these departments transitioned from volunteers to the beginning of career fire departments. So Strategic Initiative 2 was, what's the cost look like of what is determined is needed in the plan? So we did take a shot at identifying capital equipment and apparatus replacement pricing costs. We looked at a schedule based on a 15-year cycle for apparatus, fire engines, or the ladder truck, a 15-year replacement cycle. Excuse me. We looked at 15 years. We just replaced those self-contained breathing apparatus. That was about $350,000. Those are good for 15 years. So we identified all those costs, extrication tools, known as the jaws of life. The bigger ticket items were identified. We also looked at staffing needs based, again, on current state and what we saw coming down the road. We attempted to determine the costs associated with that. We looked at infrastructure needs for the fire stations to keep them up and current in terms of IT connectivity and training. And then there was a lot of discussion about fiscal independence. As you know, we're a joint powers authority through the state of California, and we're funded through contributions of each of the member communities. A lot of our administrative workload is provided by the city of Arroyo Grande, who then bills the fire authority for that staff time. There was a lot of conversation about how do we set up a truly independent organization where we have our own payroll folks, and we have our own retirement contract, and we have our own accounts payable people in HR. So that's what that last bullet has to do with. And then this is the big one. This is the less than tangible initiative, and there was reference to it being called the end game. And if you look at this, and if you were, say, for example, considering a political campaign, and again, this was adopted in 2017. You can see that the ingredients are create a stakeholder outreach group, a group of supporters of the Five Cities Fire Authority. You build relationships with county and elected officials. You look at civic groups and others to work with you. And you look for, bottom line, political advocates. I will say that blended into this goal was the formation of a 501c3 nonprofit called Friends of Five Cities Fire Authority, which is in business and doing extremely well. They do not focus on political advocacy. Their main mission is to help us fundraise and look for grants that are only available to nonprofits to help us secure, procure some of that big ticket equipment that I had mentioned to you. So the end game, goal three of this fiscal sustainability is, what does it look like? What do you want to do? Is this thing, do you want to look at forming a fire district? There's a lot of conversation about this leading up to the formation of the Five Cities Fire Authority. Do the community support a revenue measure with increased community contribution? All of those things were identified in this plan as what the board should be taking a peek at and giving direction to staff. You've heard from David Church, for example, as an educational item at one of your past meetings. There's a lot of work if there was community interest in looking at fire district formation in terms of analysis that would have to take place. And then, again, the big picture, what does it look like and what's the timeline with key milestones identified? And as you can see, they're unresolved because the communities are focused on other priorities right now, and we as staff at Five Cities Fire have not received any direction at this time. Projections and prioritizations. I know I'm talking fast. Please stop me. Don't be scared when you see this slide, which, as I recall, is very hard to see anyway, so maybe no one will read it. We took everything that was in the plan. I apologize. Hard copies are available through the Five Cities Fire website or the Oceano website. We took everything that was identified in the plan, and what this number is starting with the proposed budget for this year, making a couple of adjustments, and then adding things in that are identified down the road. The only thing that's not in here is long-term vehicle replacement funding, because there's been a lot of conversations about other ways to accomplish that goal. And I believe the number, Carrie, if you can see it better than me, it's 8.5 million dollars end game complete build out, and that's a significant number when we have a budget today of over $5 million. So I just wanted to show you this is part of the direction and work plan that was identified in the strategic plan. This is added detail to it. I would say that the items worth looking at on the second chart would be at the lower half, and you can see the vehicles identified by replacement date and estimated replacement value. The communities are going to have to be looking at that in the near future as fleet gets to the end of its useful life. Oh, and I had some animation. These are the units that are coming due the soonest. This is a prioritization of the strategic plan that was approved by a prior board in February of 2018. And when you see the budget projections that we're currently looking at as we go through the JPA revisions and negotiations with the memorandum of agreement, and you see five-year projections, those projections are really based on the prioritization that was identified in February of 2018. The big emphasis was the known and accepted reality that our reserve firefighter program was on the decline with recruitment and retention issues. So the biggest item in here is phasing of full-time firefighting staff from the reserve firefighters. We do have phase one completed. The first three firefighters are at the Arroyo Grande Station. Knocking on wood that this budget gets approved for the next fiscal year, we'll be recruiting three full-time firefighters for the Grover Beach Station. Remember, we have to hire in threes because of a shift-based operation. So three people actually equals one person there every day of the week. Couple other items were in there, looking at maybe starting equipment replacement funding, and then a transition to a full-time battalion chief, I believe, in 2020. So again, I know you have this information. I just wanted to gloss over it. So what comes next? And again, this was a presentation for the fire board, was, is there direction or interest in reprioritizing the strategic plan at this time? Would you direct staff to continue to do what we can with the resources available to us? Or obviously we were looking for other direction from the board. And I believe, and again, Vice President White can add perspective from a board member, but from a staff perspective, I believe based on the conversation at the board level, we're still in that period of flux, right? We're still negotiating through JPA revisions. Oceano's looking at a ballot measure in March of next year. So does this really make sense that we're touching the strategic plan at this time? And I believe my direction was continue to execute what you can with the resources that you have.
Excuse me, back on the last slide, you said the The first phase of three firefighters was AG, and the second is Grover. Is the third Oceano then?
Yes. So if you continue to carry this, and again, I'm getting old and my eyesight's failing, but you do see in the third year there's firefighters for Station 3, which is the Oceano Station. And there has been conversation, depending on what the future holds, would those be firefighters or would those become engineers, which is the driver or operator, if whether it's three personnel at Oceano or it's two personnel at Oceano, there's a slight variance financially between the firefighter and the cost of an engineer. But yes, Director, it is built in.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like there's so many moving parts to this. So I was curious, can you give me, say, two or three of the top challenges or the have to happens? Probably one of them is money.
I believe that's the number one issue is funding. Uh-huh. Because with money we could implement these plan components and staffing, response staffing, shoring that up, that's a huge issue right now. As you recall, just by hiring the first three folks at the Arroyo Grande station, we were able to shore up a response, because if you recall, the Oceano station was browned out several times previous to that, just because we didn't have enough staffing. On a daily basis, there's a full-time captain in an Oceano, and then there's a reserve firefighter, which is one of those part-time employees. If we didn't have enough personnel, we had to brown out the Oceano station for either a 24-hour shift or part of a shift until we could bring someone in, and that captain would move to one of the other stations. So with the community support, I believe we're addressing that, and we're making great progress on it. Fire prevention is something that we're tasked with, you know, enforcing the fire code, making sure the communities are safe. That's something where we're struggling with staffing. And in the infinite wisdom of the state of California, that almost sounded like an editorial comment, the state fire marshal has pushed down the responsibility to do school inspections, both private and public schools, to local jurisdictions without giving us the resources to get that done. The fire severity maps that are coming out later this year, hopefully before fire season, that are based on all the damage that's happened throughout the state, we are going to be forcing compliance with the fire severity maps, again, with no resources to accomplish that task. So there's a lot of unfunded mandate type work coming down our way, as well as what we know based on our call volume trends and what's happening in which of the communities.
Okay. Thank you.
Karen, do you have anything?
Not really, except for it's, as a member of the fire board, it's very obvious that we can't do everything that even we see we need to do. I mean, this is bare bones. You know, I would love every firefighter to be a full paramedic. I would love to put away money for new vehicles. And what we did last time was we bought them on time. And I'm not sure what the interest is, but we're buying fire trucks on time. So by the time we get them paid for, they'll be obsolete. If you look at it that way, I mean, it's kind of like you do a car, but that's the only way we could get them, and we had to have them, because, and if we had more firefighters, it's like people criticize because they see the big fire truck, the hook and ladder, the whatever you want to call it, going out to a medical call. Well, if your firefighters don't have their best tool with them when they go somewhere, if they took a squad, they would have to go back to the station to pick up the fire truck to go to a fire. So you obviously don't, and that truck also contains all kinds of other tools. So they have to take the truck. Well, if we had four firefighters at the Arroyo Grande station, three at Oceano and three at Grover Beach, then the firefighters could take a squad to a medical, and there would still be two firefighters at the Arroyo Grande station. They could jump in the truck. And I mean, there's things you do because you have to do them. They aren't the most efficient things, but that's where we are. Because you would never want a firefighter out in the field without the truck, for instance. I mean, we get a lot of criticism about that one. Nobody understands. But that truck also carries lots and lots and lots of tools. The Hearst tool, the jaws of life are in that tool. The crane chainsaws, the ladders to go up three stories, that's all in that truck with just the hook and ladder. So, I mean, these are just kind of some of the things we deal with. And we have two battalion chiefs and three shifts. So a battalion chief is the fire boss, it's not the general. You're the general. They're the colonels or the
I would just say that they're the supervisors of multiple companies, right? So the captain's the boss of that specific station or engine company, and then the battalion chief is the boss of multiple resources and an incident commander plus administrative workload.
Yeah. Yeah, and everybody has multiple jobs. I mean, the guy might be a firefighter, but he also does IT work, or you'd be surprised how many talents they have outside of just being a firefighter, just being an EMT. Anyway, so it's been a real challenge, and the figures really don't fit yet. We really don't have enough money to do what we have on paper now. But we're working toward it very diligently. If anybody wins the lotto, let me know. Thank you.
I'll be the first to.
Would you say that unanticipated costs or rises in the budget, are those usually payroll driven?
So, personally, when I think about unanticipated costs, it would be, a catastrophic failure of a piece of equipment.
Okay.
Right. So the only thing that I would say is unanticipated in the budget in terms of payroll would be, are we heading into a period of labor negotiations with the local, or is there something being driven by the state or PERS that's going to impact us that we don't have local control or knowledge of?
I have another question that's a little bit off point, but when, for instance, last year with the Santa Rosa fires, how does the fire authority deal with those kind of emergencies, and if you can contrast that to what CAL FIRE does?
So when we think about the Tubbs Fire, which was Santa Rosa, that's such a catastrophic event that impacted so many people and was wind-driven at such a rapid pace that I don't think a large city fire department could adequately anticipate that. I mean, Santa Rosa's got over 100,000 people, and their fire department, one fire station was burning, and the firefighters that were there, they didn't fight the fire. They were trying to get people out of their homes. So it's really hard for me to visualize something like that, but if we did, human life is our number one priority, and we would build tactics around that. How do we prepare for that? Well, we prepare for it by trying to prevent fires before they start. With the city of Arroyo Grande's got far more wildfire threat than the Oceano Community Services District does, and we're focusing on trying to obtain some state funding to come up with a fuels management program there. But it's really the California Master Mutual Aid System, from the 60s, has been the linchpin and an international leader based on the premise that none of us can do it by ourselves. So within the county, we have what's called, and I know I've mentioned this before, so you can stop me, automatic aid agreements. So those are contracts that are iced that are saying, based on this type of incident, so if we had a structure fire, knock on wood, we're not going to, besides all of our resources, we would be getting resources from CAL FIRE and Napomo and Pismo Beach. And if they had an incident in one of their jurisdictions, they would be pulling resources from us. So we're backing each other up to provide adequate staffing. If the event's growing in magnitude, there was a picture of the casino in the presentation at one point. That was a 3-alarm fire. We had a ladder truck from San Luis Obispo here. We had resources from Morro Bay here. We all back each other up, and that just expands into the state. I will tell you that Vice President White got an email today from me, because at the national level, the federal government, interacting with the California Fire Assistance Agreement, which is what pays us all back for going and helping each other, there's a huge conflict right now over reimbursement, and the federal government is threatening not to reimburse agencies for helping each other, and certainly not reimbursing agencies until they incur a cost. And that makes sense from a business perspective, but if you're a volunteer fire department and there's scores of them in Northern California, they will not be able to respond to these large incidents and help. So there's a lot of challenges. Operationally, I think we're really good at working together. But again, I don't think anyone's ready for that huge incident.
Also, can you explain to the community about, with the fire authority, our insurance being less?
Sure.
I've forgotten what that's called.
Yeah, it's known as an ISO rating, which stands for Insurance Service Office. Insurance Service Office is a third-party business that collects a lot of analytics to give to the insurance companies, so their underwriters and risk analysis folks can determine what insurance rates are in different places. By doing things like working with Tony's team and working on the water system and consistent pressure or a plan, if we have a fire somewhere in town and we're having water pressure issues, we can call Tony or one of his staff people and they will make changes to the water system to bring us the boosted pressure that we need. That matters to the ISO rating. The fact that we're dispatched in a dedicated fire dispatch center, that adds scores to our ISO rating. A lot of it's drive time. So what is the drive time and how quickly can you have multiple resources that structure fire versus the Oceano engine with two people on it by themselves, hoping that automatic aid from other agencies is available? The Five Cities Fire Authority with three stations, with actually having a ladder truck is beneficial to the ISO rating. And good planning as well. I will tell you that since those big fires in Northern California, I've been contacted by primarily Arroyo Grande residents that are adjacent to open space. Insurance companies are visiting residents on property or adjacent to open space and sending investigators out to assess them, and they're seeing an increase in fire insurance rates or, in severe cases, cancellation of fire insurance rates. So the ISO rating really helps us. We improved our score. I believe it's a 1 through 7 system. Departments like City of San Francisco and City of Los Angeles are ones. So I'm really proud of the fact that we're a 3. Yeah. We used to be a 4. So I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, that was. So if we are able to pass the fire tax, then that helps us, because if we're no longer part of the fire authority, then we would lose that ISO rating, correct?
Potentially.
Potentially. Mm-hmm. Okay. I think that's important for the public to understand. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Shirley.
I have a question. I'm curious. You know, I remember back in the 90s, the volunteer program here in Oceano was great, and there was a lot of, you know, young men that were proud to be part of the team here. Is there any volunteers, and if not, why not?
So I was one of those young men with hair who... was a proud volunteer in Grover City Fire that became Grover Beach Fire Department. And I think at the time, it was a different time. It was still that community spirit to serve your community, and we had flexibility. Either people were contractors and self-employed, or they had employers that were very flexible, and the employers were in the service area. So maybe an employee who worked at Povey could have been an Oceano volunteer, and they would have supported them coming to the station and getting on a rig. I will tell you that everyone's got a story, and my defining story about fire was I was a Grover volunteer. I was driving to San Luis Obispo because, again, we have families, and we have to go to where the work is. That was probably the biggest thing that started the downfall of volunteerism. I was driving to San Luis Obispo. I was in Pismo Beach on the freeway. My pager went off, and it was cardiac arrest at Povey. And we shared the dispatch center, so I heard Oceano calls as well. Nobody went. Nobody was in town to respond. A second tone out for a cardiac arrest at Povey, and nobody went. The ambulance eventually got there. That was my defining moment out of guilt and shame that we had to do something to improve service delivery to our communities. So again, I will tell you that volunteerism, it's a multifactored issue. Again, we have to go where the work is, which takes us out of town. Secondly, the training requirements for a volunteer firefighter, the minimum requirements are identical to a career firefighter. So if you're working all day and then you go to drill and then you have to train and spend your weekends and all of your off time training to the same level as a career firefighter, that takes a big toll on your personal time and your family. So that's my personal perspective to share with you. It just got tough. And obviously burnout. You know, if you have to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and go to work and you've gone on 3 calls all night long, you might not get on that, get up for that fourth one because you have to wake up in a few hours and go to work. So I hope that helps you with the perspective of volunteerism.
Sort of.
I think we had a smaller population at that point, too.
Yes.
It was just a whole, like you said, a whole different time.
We got really excited in Grover Beach if our logbook broke 300 calls a year, right? And collectively, the three communities, we're at 3,800 right now.
Any other comments? I'll open it to public comment now. Is there any public comment on this item? Okay, good. So no public comment. So we're just, thank you very much for...
My pleasure.
We're collecting all this information, and I really appreciate you coming out tonight. Is there anything anyone else wants to say to the fire chief?
No.
Thank you. Thank you for your great service. And see you soon. Thank you. So as we I think it's just receive and file on this one.
Yes.
Okay, so that brings us to hearing items. Should none. Received written communications. Do we have anything? Late received written communications. Future agenda items, see the board meeting timeline. So, yeah. Does anyone have anything for future agenda items?
Yes, I have something. So this board had previously given direction to determine the impacts on the OCSD of the Oceano Dunes SVRA, and that was particularly in the context of being ready to submit comments to the EIR for State Parks Public Works Plan. I would like to bring back to the board for clarification at the next meeting because right now there's nothing happening on the Public Works Plan. However, at the July Coastal Commission meeting in San Luis Obispo, July 10th through 12th, the staff is going to bring forth a reconsideration of the coastal development permit for the state park. So there'll be an evaluation of the whole operation of the state parks and their permit from the Coastal Commission. That report is going to be prepared or will be released. The staff report will be released on June 21st. And staff is looking for input on that right now in terms of what their the information they'll present and the assessments they'll make in that report. So the only meeting prior to that is the one on the 12th, June 12th. So if we could put that on the agenda just to decide if the board wants to submit any comments in advance of the Coastal Commission meeting.
Pass that on to Pablo then.
And I'd spoken with Pablo about this, and he said if the board is supportive, it would best fit on the June 12th agenda.
I continue to have some concerns about us involving ourselves with the state park. If I could do an election and see what the people of Oceano want to do about that, then I could act. But I am really concerned. We have our own water problems, our own problems of fire, obviously, and I just don't know why we're delving into this when it's really... It's almost none of our business.
President Austin, I think at this point the question really is, just so we don't get too far into this as a discussion item on that issue, really the question is just, is your board supportive of bringing this for consideration of whether or not there will be comments made?
I'm not for it being on any future agenda. I don't think it's not a district matter. We got to stick to district matters, matters, and
if I could just say, the board previously gave direction that I could work with Pavo, Mr. Ogren, to determine what the impacts are on the services that the OCSD provides in terms of our. So the lift station gets clogged, and we have litter issues. Just assessing what the impacts are in our purview. And the board had previously supported determining that, but it was in the context of the Public Works Plan comments. So this is only a change to, do we want to make comments to a different venue?
I'm not in favor of comments on that either. I think we need to stick to district matters.
Okay, so do we take a, someone want to make a motion then?
Yeah, I'll make a motion that, what do we need a motion if it's not going to be on the agenda? What's the motion for?
Well, I think someone supportive of it should probably okay. make a motion to put this item on the June 12th, is it 12th?
Yes.
June 12th agenda, coordinate with Pavo in regards to scope of the question.
I move that we put on the June 12th agenda a discussion of whether the board wishes to submit comments on the ODSVRA impacts on the OCSD in advance of the Coastal Commission meeting.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay.
Do you want to take public comment?
Yes. Is there any public comment on this issue? None. Okay, so my thoughts are this is something that I think the community will be out to give their, I agree with what Shirley said that we need to stick to what we do here and let all the other, there's a, you know, a lot of organizations that have, that put feedback into that plan. I just don't think that it's something we need to involve ourselves in as individuals, you know, that's fine, but as a board, I think we need to just not get involved. So, do you want to do a roll call vote on the
Director Pogel?
Yes.
Director Villa?
Yes.
Director Gibson?
No.
Vice President White?
No.
President Alston?
No. Okay, so with that, is there a motion to adjourn?
I'll make that motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.